Run! Go! Get to the jibber jabber!
Hey Valerie! It's on Apple Podcasts and Podomatic! Freaking awesome!
Ladies and gentlemen, it is May the 4th, so you know what that means. May the 4th be with you. So we're giving you a special episode today. I am joined today, as always, with J-Mac. Say hello.
Hello, everybody.
And for a special treat for you guys on official Star Wars Day, we have a fantastic guest, Misty Rosas. She is a stunt actress who played Quail in The Mandalorian season on Disney Plus. Not only that, but exactly. Not only that, though, she's had quite a really cool career in stunt acting. So she's been in stuff from Jingle All the Way to Monster House to J-Mac's favorite. Tell him.
Yeah, my favorite ever film about killer gorillas. Killer gorillas? That's hard to say. Killer gorillas. Congo.
Yeah, man. So this is going to be a treat for us, but it's also going to be a treat for you guys. Thanks always for listening and giving us all those shares that you never give us. Nah, I'm not kidding. I see the stats.
He sees the stats. Kevin, yeah. Do you see the stats?
Always seeing the stats. So thanks very much. Up there.
That's the stats.
That's the stats. So yeah, thanks very much for always backing us, for tuning in, for downloading our episodes. We really appreciate that. So today on May the 4th, we are going to give this treat to you guys, and Misty will always be welcome on this Jibber Jabber podcast, especially when she's in season 2. Fingers crossed, right? Wink, wink, please.
Fingers crossed.
Yes. And in this episode, before we play our interview I wouldn't say interview, it's a conversation.
Yes.
Because that's what friends do. We conversate. We conversate, J-Mac. Right? I make up the words in this podcast.
Yes,
thanks.
You do.
Right?
Yes,
we conversate. So, see, now you're trying to make me lose my train of thought.
I'm sorry. Get your thought trained.
Ready? So, for anybody that doesn't know, J-Mac is only halfway through the Mandalorian season on Disney Plus. And in this episode, when we're conversating with Misty, I suppose it is me that kind of drops the bomb that, you know, Quail gets shot by a stormtrooper. So, for anybody listening that didn't know that, you should have watched it by now. Right. And that goes for you too, J-Mac. I'm not even sorry that I ruined it. Right? Misty and I are just like, yeah, it's a shame that the first time a stormtrooper actually shot someone, it happened to be me. Jordan's sitting there like, what? Quail's not dead. Quail's not dead.
Oh, jeez.
So yeah, so this has been a hell of an episode for us. We've just had our conversation with Misty, so we're gonna play that for you guys right now.
I have spoken.
Okay, so on the Jibber Jabber podcast is the fantastic Misty Rosas.
Hi everybody, how are you?
How are you doing in lockdown?
Good. I'm a yogi, so I've been practicing for a long time, since like 2001. So I think the most important thing that teaches you is to just roll with it. This is what it is in this moment. How can you make it as positive as possible to, you know, maintain your heart and head health? So lots of yoga in my room and just writing and doing podcasts and interviews and sending a lot of Tops stickers.
Yeah, I can always see him on social media that you're very, with your fans, you spend a lot of time reaching out back to them when they reach out to you. It's one of the nice things. That's why I thought, you know, she would be great to have a conversation with on the podcast, because I saw that you embrace your fans, which is obviously nice to see. I think with regards to lockdown, the best way for us to kind of get through it is when we come out the other side of it, if we're like, you know, here's what I achieved while I was in lockdown, rather than, you know, here's what I'm going to do when I get out. I think maybe if we had that attitude, it'd be a lot more positivity at least coming out in the world.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Absolutely. It's just take care of yourself right now, rest, because I feel like when they open everything, it is just going to be this, like,
yes,
area of people, like, and they're just getting worn out again, because, like, they do to try to do everything they wanted to do all at once. So it's
yeah,
just like,
on the subject of you being a yogi, am I right in saying that it's Bikram yoga that you do?
Yeah, actually, I teach Bikram. I practice it usually on the days that I teach, but I also I live far away from where I teach, so I do more of an Ashtanga flow practice as well, especially right now in the house. So, there's yeah. not, I couldn't possibly get enough heat going. So,
yeah, what's that? Is it like 100 degrees, 100 and something?
It depends. It depends on the studio. Some are really hardcore about the heat, and it's like 100 and 104, 106. But at the studio where I teach, she's always kind of, you know, yeah, we have it heated, but I feel, and it's my same belief system too, where you want everybody to hang, be able to hang in there and do all of the postures. But if they get too hot, they just start dropping. And so it's like, so, you know, she keeps it, I think, around 95. 200, but then in the summer, totally different game, especially in my class. I teach at 12:30, and she has these beautiful windows on the back wall, and the sun like shines right through. And it's like all my students are on the left and the right. Every once in a while, there's a hardcore couple that are like, I'm gonna do this in the sun. Like, are you sure? So, because I've done that too, and it's like, ooh, it's a whole another level of hot.
Yeah. I've tried yoga a couple of times. I've never tried hot yoga, but yeah, normal yoga nearly killed me, so I think hot yoga would probably do it.
I swear by it though. I swear it's really the one thing that's helped to kind of heal my body from all the stunt work, and then the costume work, and Quill definitely he was heavy and so wow. It really did a number on my shoulders, my spine, and my hips. So it's like, in order to rehabilitate that and heal that, it's got to be yoga every day for a while. So I'm okay right now. I'm like, I'm healing the body.
Oh, good. So yeah. So what actually, so how did you, I mean, stunt acting, it's not something that you would see advertised in a newspaper. So for you, what got you into stunt acting?
I was a gymnast. I started gymnastics when I was 2.5. And I trained as a gymnast all the way up to the elite level, you know, until I was 17. So took a little break and then went back to it for a few more years for college. And then the coach that trained me when I was in the elite program, the production company, Congo, they... Mm-hmm. approached him and asked, they were obviously looking for people that were under 5 feet with tremendous body strength, especially upper body strength, to be able to handle being quadruped, which means on all fours. So he knew that at the time too, I had already been working at Disneyland and doing costume work and dancing in the different shows. And so he's like, why don't you try for this? I mean, you're the right height, the right body type. And you've also had costume work experience. So, you know, you should audition for this. You know, I didn't know what I was auditioning for, but it's like, yeah, you know, let's do this. And so it was just one of those things where it felt like luck and knowing the right people and being at the right place at the right time. But it was also a lifetime of training that also I had with me going in. So
it's like the stars aligned then, and that job found you. So it's like a match made in heaven almost.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
did you have to take in account new types of training? I know that I had maybe done a couple years in professional wrestling, and the first thing they teach you for like the first 3 years is break falls. So I take it with, I don't know, because I've never done any kind of gymnastics. Do you learn how to fall and do all that through gymnastics, or did you have to learn that separately?
Yes, I mean, it's not, yeah, you know, I mean, it's for me, as you grow up and stuff, doing it, you do, yeah, you definitely learn techniques. And then also you don't mean to, but I started taking some seriously hard falls when I was, I remember I was about 8 years old and just doing like a back walk over back tuck on beam, and my feet were too far to the left. And so I just slid off, landed on my right quad and flipped over, and it happens really fast. So yeah, because of gymnastics and, learning, doing timers and stuff for different types of skills, you do learn how to fall through it. So, and twisting have air awareness. So
One thing I did notice when I was looking through, it was like a show reel I had seen on YouTube, which doesn't actually get highlighted a lot, when, because I always refer to stunt men and women as stunt actors, because one thing, there was a scene where you were on a bed with someone, and I think it was for, I don't know if it was a music video, but you kind of gazing into the fellow's eyes and you're pulled away, and it kind of made me think, well, you're not just a body in place of someone else's character, you're actually becoming that character and almost speaking through their body language. And did you have to develop that yourself, or did that just come naturally to you?
Well, that was actually for the music video, like the first big one that I shot, called Panic Button. And I've been in belts and stuff, again, for gymnastics and learning how to do some of the harder skills, like, things off of bars, release moves off of bars and stuff. So I've always known how to do that. But Matt, who was the actor, he'd never done anything like that before. But he comes from a football background, so he's a game for any of it. And, you do the first few times, it's like, they'll take your weight so you can get familiar with, feeling that. And then they'll yank you gently, and then they'll try a little harder. And it's like, okay, this is the real thing. And so you just get a feel for it. And then one of my closest friends, Nancy Thurston, who's like an award-winning stunt woman, she was our coordinator, so I knew he was in good hands with her, and she just was really gentle and, informative, and, we took care of him, because he also, I told him we could get a double, but he really, really wanted to do the high fall, and it was a 40-foot high fall. And so I made sure that I put enough time in, like a couple of months in, for him to be able to take the steps to be able to do that. Cause from like this one tier that I think is about 25, maybe 30 feet, then suddenly goes up to 40. That last 10 feet, I kid you not, like you're up there and in the wind it sways. So when people haven't been up there, the first time they go up there, you have them go up with people, just a couple of them, and just have them sit and just get comfortable, because there's nothing above you. So you feel like, it doesn't feel super stable. So,
I've experienced that one time. It was just I think it was maybe a 30 foot kind of free fall experience, but you're on a cable, you're on a wire, and you just have to jump, and it just lets you go down quite slowly. But when you're standing at the top, it does sway, and it throws your whole perspective of everything off, and you think, I'm just going to die now.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's one of those things. Imagine trying to stay composed. It's like you see those things at the theme parks. It's like a ball, and you can sit in, and then there's these bungee ropes at the side, and then the magnet lets go, and the ball like just flies into there. I can't imagine, that's how stunt actresses and actors like yourself work in those kind of environments. And how do you stay composed in that kind of, as that's happening?
Again, it comes from my training as a gymnast, where your heart is pounding, and it just depends on the stunt. Usually I don't sleep a lot the night before, because knowing whatever it is that I would be doing, I'm constantly in my head thinking of all the scenarios that could go wrong, and how I would get myself out of those. And so I feel like when I come to set, I've done so much work of, it's like, okay, let's erase that. what you would do in that scenario, but that's not going to happen. So let's just focus on doing it. But yeah, there's been moments where my heart's pounding and it's like, just breathe and let's ride this out.
You never assume that the way when you're, when you see like the behind the scenes takes and stuff, and you see all the, you know, the stuntmen and women, you always, you never take into account that, well, as much as it's your job and as much as you're very well, you know, you're trained in it, you're still human at the end of the day. You probably forget how insecure sometimes you can feel, just like any other human about to jump off a bridge or, you know, in the middle of a car stunt.
It's adrenaline, and it's like, you know, just breathe and, you know,
So you've done a lot of movies, actually. And I saw that you had played a part in Jingle All the Way also. The Arnold Schwarzenegger Christmas movie. So what are some of your favorite projects that you worked on? And whenever I ask this question sometimes to actors or actresses, I find that a lot of the time it's the least ones you expect. You know, you get the big high blockbusters and then you'll get a smaller project, but there's always something that's personal from a smaller project, I find, that you tend to see. And so what would some of your highlights be for you so far in your stunt acting career?
It is absolutely what you said, where there are these really thrilling moments on these big blockbuster movies, but there's also, you know, these smaller films that I got to do and, you know, be in prosthetics and get to act and do stunts all at once. You know, one of them for sure was called Room 6. You know, that one with Christine Taylor, it was it was really, really cool. Cause I mean, at the time, and I should have just taken a picture, later, but it was, I played a demon and, being at prosthetics and stuff, it was just, it looked really masculine. And yet the character that I played was just a sweet little church lady, but this demon embodied her, for a second. And so, just looking at its face and stuff, character-wise, like, there's a lot of male energy. And so, and I just messed with her. It's like, you reveal me, and I'm looking right at Christine. And I just did some stuff, and my mom's like, how could you do that? Like, I stepped my tongue out at her, and then later in post, they added and made the tongue even longer, which was really cool. And then I just, like, go out after her, and I literally flew all over this church. Like, I flew over her, and then, like, I jumped over pews and, like, hit the back and pushed and off and came down and then kind of crawled at her and then started walking at her and then, you know, went right at her. And then it was like a nightmare sequence that she had. And it was just cool, you know. And again, it was for a smaller film, but best time. So I've never done anything like evil like that. So it was really fun to be able to play and to do things that I wouldn't normally do to anybody.
Yeah. So. I think the, stunt actors and stunt performers, sometimes they're not forgotten about, but I don't think they get the recognition that they deserve when it comes to award season. Do you think that there should be an Oscar for stunt performance?
I think so. You know, if you look at any trailers for, you know, films and TV and stuff, The Mandalorian included, like, it's all the action, you know, the exciting stuff. So I feel like, you know, an ensemble of, you know, the stunt coordinator and the people that, you know, did the stunt work, they definitely should get a nod, because it's the action. It's, you know. Yeah.
We've been saying that for some time on this podcast, that it is quite a shame that they're not forgotten about, of course, because it's part of what makes the movie special. But I just think, you know, for every Leonardo DiCaprio, there's a team of people behind him making that character come to life just as much as he is. So I think it would be really nice to see all the award ceremonies, you know, recognize that. Who knows? We're in this world, anything can change, as you can see this from what's happening right now. So I'd like to see that happen, because it would be quite amazing.
Yeah, it would be really nice. Actually, one of my roommates that I live with, he is an award-winning stuntman, and he was on you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And he was part of the huge fire burn scene. And he's this seasoned, amazing stuntman, Mark Wagner. And they knew that he could take it. So it's like when they aimed with the fire gun, they aimed him. And he was just... You didn't see him. Wow. It was just fire. Like, oh my gosh.
Not a bad roommate to have there, huh?
Yeah.
Sitting over breakfast. So what are you doing today? Jumping into fire.
Right. Yeah. Body burn. I did one for Van Helsing, and I didn't tell my mom, though. I didn't tell her what I was up to that day, because usually she'll, when she knows I'm working on something, she'll call every morning. It's like, hey, honey, you know, how are you? What are you doing today? And I was like, I'm not sure yet. And I knew what I was doing. But I knew that she was at work and she doesn't, like, she can't, like, focus or breathe until I call her back and say, you know, I'm fine. So. Yeah. Then that afternoon, like after, you know, we had done it, she's like, so how was your day? I was like, it was good. It was gnarly. She's like, why? What'd you do? It's like, fire burns today. She's like, how'd you do that?
Like, it's funny. I mean, most people when they leave for work, somebody will say, you know, drive safe. I mean, how do you say get set on fire safely?
Exactly. God. That was one that we were on Van Helsing, and that's one of the blockbuster movies that I really enjoyed. It was just cool. Yeah. The sets were huge, and it was one of those, like, you know, Star Wars, that's you walk on set and you're like, oh my god, I'm here.
So when you walk on set, do you instantly get that? Because we've never been on a set yet. One day we will, but we've never been on set yet. And I always imagine it'd be like, you know, I heard that when they had started filming for the Force Awakens, that the minute that Han Solo and Chewbacca stood on the, you know, on the Millennium Falcon, that the whole crew just stopped, because it was such an awe to be there with those guys in such a, you know, such a momentous scene. So when you walk onto a set, do you feel that same kind of energy, like that you're actually part of the movie? Like, do you suspend your disbelief? Yeah,
it's I always, like, I get butterflies in my stomach, and there's excitement, depending on the day, depending on what I'm doing. It's always super, it's just fun, and I feel grateful every time I get the opportunity to be on a set. Like, I don't take it for granted. Like, I show up and I'm here. I'm like, okay, what are we doing? Let's do this. So, it is amazing. Star Wars was one of those. And sometimes, you know, they will have different units shooting in sometimes three different places. And I remember one day, my unit, they were a little behind. So, like, have time. So it's like, well, I'm just going to trek over and see what they're doing elsewhere. And sometimes I don't like to do that, because I want to be surprised when the show comes out, when, you know, because you don't know, you only know what is going on in your scripts. You don't know what's going on in the other ones. So, but it's always fun to walk on there and it's like, whoa, you know, be in the dome when the Razor Crest is in there. And the first time I saw it go into, you know, what is it, hyperspace? It was insane. It was like, ah!
Yeah. So that's when the fan comes out. So I take it you are a Star Wars fan at heart.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes. I can't imagine anybody working on a Star Wars project that doesn't have that Star Wars, you know, in their heart. I just couldn't imagine it. Probably does happen, though. The coffee guy, maybe.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, when my agent got my deal memo, I was driving somewhere, and because we had been waiting, I had done my audition. I didn't know what I was auditioning for. And then finally, they did send the deal memo to her. And she's like, I just got your deal memo. Where are you? I was like, I'm driving. She's like, you might want to pull over. I was like, okay, why? She's like, I'm sending you something. And then I opened it and, you know, looked at it and scrolled down to the bottom and says Star Wars. I'm like,
yes.
It was such a crazy moment. I'm by myself in Los Angeles in my car, just parked on the street, and just like crying. Like, my mom's like, guess what? So she's like, oh my God. And then my little brothers, my younger brothers, because they're huge Star Wars fans, they're like, she made it, finally, she made it.
So the costume. The Quill costume itself, you said it was very heavy. I mean, how bad was it? Or was it really uncomfortable, or was it just hard work for a short time?
I don't like to complain, because I'm the one that is choosing this and choosing to do it. It was heavy. It was really, it was very heavy. I didn't weigh it because it didn't matter. It wasn't going to be like, oh, well, it weighs this much, forget it, I'm not doing it. So I was just like, okay, handle this. And I, you know, my first fitting with Legacy, you know, I get an idea of what this is going to be like. And it's, you know, silicone. So once the mouth closes, I have no air. There is nothing coming in. So it's just like, whew, it would get really hot. And it's just, you just handle it. After my first fitting, I was like, was leaving and going, okay, I need to up my cardio and I need to do way more squats and, you know, a ton of core work, because that is where, you know, the weight would go, is like on my shoulders, but it's my stomach that had to be really, really super strong in my legs to, you know, keep it up. So,
yeah.
And I just remember one time on set, Brendan, who is, you know, one of the Mandos, and he's like, your eyes, like, he turned me over and he was trying to do like a Casanova, like, kiss moment. And first I'm like, what are you doing, dude? And then, like, he didn't realize how heavy it was. Like, he had me. But we went a little bit. I'm like, no.
I'd love to see that outtake.
And the backpack that I wore, that contained all of the, you know, electronics and stuff, you know, and then there were a ton of wires right behind my neck. And my guys, my puppeteers would try to like spread them as much as they could so I could move my neck a little bit, but it was a lot.
Wow.
I was so grateful and I love what I do. So, you know, I no negativity at all for me. It's just like, just handle it, miss. Handle it.
So with Nick Nolte, who actually looks like Quill, by the way, you can actually see his features in the mask. There's definitely his features there, but he voiced Quill. Did you have to say his lines, or did you have someone else? Did they shout the lines and you kind of respond to them, or how was it that they done the dialogue?
I was lucky. I mean, I've done this type of work before where I've worked at the Jim Henson Company for a long time, and we create, you know, it. Basically puppets, but they're digital puppets. And I have puppeteers and they'll do the dialogue, and I'm, you know, they're the voice and the facial animation and I'm the body. Mm-hmm. And then we fuse that together in real time. And that's the same process on, you know, The Mandalorian, where fortunately, John had Nick record all of his lines ahead of time. Sometimes I would get them the night before, you know, if I was lucky, but most of the time I'd get them that morning. And but as for me too, I was always off book with, you know, the scenes and stuff and the lines. Like, I would go in and our first rehearsals in the morning, the private ones with just John and Dave or Rick or Deb, and just the cast, like, I would be him and I would say the lines and stuff. And then when we would, then I'd run over to my crew, and sometimes they would try to get in there to be able to see the flow of scenes and stuff and what I was doing when I was saying lines and stuff, so they can kind of get an idea too of when to trigger the dialogue track. So after that rehearsal, I would race right to the big rig, where everything, you know, Quill's face and head and everything lights up. And then I would listen, you know, to the dialogue, and Nick Nolte gave me usually 2 to 3 different takes and different versions of each line. Mm-hmm. And then after, you know, during rehearsal, we would kind of get an idea of what sounded good. And then I would choose, and they would put them together, you know, and the director would come and listen to what it, you know, was sounding like. And he'd either say, no, try that line and, you know, this way. And so then we would, you know, fix it. And then I'd listen to it all the way through a few times. And then, yeah, usually our first couple of takes were sometimes a little wonky as we were getting our flow together and our timing, and of them knowing when I, you know, we would want certain lines. I would always try to give them some sort of, I don't know, physical cue or tell them, like, okay, on this line, I'm going to start moving. It's hard to explain. Like, it's something that you just kind of have to see. And then we would just get in a flow, especially by like take three or so. And yeah. And then all four of us all came together and mixed into one quill. So.
And what a well done job as well. Quill was one of those characters that automatically, you know, the audience is going to take to and love, like almost like a fathery kind of figure, the character that wants the best for everything that he's surrounded with. However, I think you may be the first character ever to be shot by a stormtrooper successfully. there is something you can put on a t-shirt.
Right.
Have you ever seen a stormtrooper shoot at something? And
I haven't. Thanks, Kevin. He just spoiled it for me again.
Jordan hasn't watched the
all of it
train yet. He was a bit late getting to Disney Plus.
It's on YouTube. It was a lot of different podcasters. What their reactions to episode 7. And at the very end of it, one gentleman is like, the one time they didn't miss. Yeah. Like, oh, I know.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's something that I think you only you hold. So you can wear that badge of honor now.
Right? Yes.
I mean, I suppose it would. I mean, it's a double-edged sword, and it takes a character. But hey, yay. Do you know? Right?
Yeah, it was hard. It was very hard to say goodbye to him on my last day. My last day was like doing a lot of the photos and stuff for the campaign work. And it's like I took it off and it's like, that's it. You know, he's done. It's like, no. Yeah. So I've never been a character that's died that like I really had such an affinity with. So it was hard. It was really hard to say goodbye to him. So
have you had that before with your previous roles, whether even in Congo or Instinct, things like that, more costume work, but the last time you take the costume off, do you get that kind of sad feeling?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's always because you do, you know, you develop an affinity with these characters and yeah, it is. It's really hard. It's like having like a final goodbye to someone that you really love and care about. It's like, oh, so, you know, I've did, it's a little television series for Netflix called Word Party. And I play Lulu and she's a little panda.
My son loves that.
She's all sass and like, and it is like our last day, you know, it's like people are crying and it was like, it was brutal too. Cause the last day, the last thing we were doing was a song and it was a number song for the little ones. And it went from like, 5 to 1. And so it was like, after the person who did number 5, then they're wrapped by. And so it just kept getting smaller and smaller. And it was the last one. It was like, no. It's crazy. And you just sometimes you just never know if they're going to do another season. So it's, you know, it's like, bye.
Yeah. The good thing about Mandalorian is, and you know, your character, you were in a suit, so there's nothing to say that you couldn't work again on the Mandalorian in many different capacities. I don't know if you would be able to tell us, will you yourself be working again with the Mandalorian series?
I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything just yet, so, but
that's
hopefully.
Not a no.
Sorry. Yeah. It's not a no, but it's not a yes.
I'll take it. Okay, that's good. So I mean, you were on set with some amazing people to work with. I imagine John Favreau, I take it he was there when you were shooting. And I did see that Matt Lucas George Lucas was on set for a lot of it. Was George Lucas around as well at the same time?
Yeah, I believe George Lucas was there, and Steven Spielberg was there. Wow. Kathleen Kennedy was there. Just all of these amazing people. I never got to really chat, you know, or be around them, especially when I was working. Because it was one of those jobs where, you know, there's part of me that wishes that I could not screw around, but have more fun.
Yeah.
But I conserved every ounce of energy that I had, you know, to, you know, just do my job and stuff. And a lot of times, like, I had my contacts in, and it was just like, stay still, you know, conserve your energy, you know, put drops in your eyeballs. And, you know, sometimes those would water. So my guys would have to put the makeup on a lot underneath my eyes and on my head. So, yeah, he was, well, it was high maintenance.
Oh, wow. Another one,
yes,
being high maintenance is Baby Yoda. You spent a lot of time with the Baby Yoda, the child. So, did you actually get a soft toy, or was that just CGI?
No, he's a puppet too. He's there. So, you know, and he's heavy. you know, in the chase scenes at the end for Chapter 7, I was holding him in my left arm. My bicep muscle, it would hurt for like a week, because of course I have a death grip on him, because that rig was moving super fast. And I kind of shifted to my right just in case I did lose my balance, you know, that I wouldn't fall on him. But yeah, so I have like death grip on him and then the reins, and I'm trying to squeeze onto that rig as hard as I could to stay on it. And it's like, it was intense. It was crazy. So, but yes, I love the baby.
Oh, you know, I actually started watching The Mandalorian myself, and my daughter, who's two, she started watching it because she had seen Quail and Baby Yoda, and that's what started her with, like, oh wow, Baby Yoda. And she did see Quail lying there in the sand, and she was quite upset to see such a character die. And then she's two, so that resonated with her. So that's
cool. That was hard, because I have family that literally we became super close friends. They were from the UK. They moved over here for a while. And so I grew up with their boys, and, you know, their boys are, I want to say, 6 and 10 now. So they're just like, they are Star Wars age. And they, you know, obviously they saw Chapter 8 yesterday, because it was streaming for them later. And, you know, Friday was their last one. And of course, like, I didn't want to spoil anything, but, you know, talking with other friends of mine here who had young boys that just were going nuts over it. And then watching Chapter 7, I was getting a lot of messages like, my son, he is inconsolable right now. They were really upset, and it broke my heart, because I remember feeling that way and not necessarily understanding why, being a little bit too young. But The Empire Strikes Back, that was traumatic for me. And, you know, all of them, you know, I was too young for Star Wars, but I remember Empire Strikes Back, and there was crying, and then, you know, there was crying too in The Return of the Jedi. So I know what that feels like, to, you know, Star Wars, the way that they write it, and, you know, what it's about, and the Force and everything, and the good versus the evil and all of that. Like, children especially, I think, because they operate on such a present moment, they really identify with it, and they really, really feel it. So yeah, that was hard for me. And my friend Bev's like, yeah, there were tears, thank you for giving me a stuff. Like, just, you know, all I said was like, it is this amazing but very emotional chapter, so, you know, keep Austin and Henry close to you. So that was a bit much for them.
The world of movies is really quite brutal to kids sometimes. I mean, Kevin and I grew up watching The Neverending Story, and the scene where the horse dies, I mean, it didn't affect me too much when I was a kid, but we watched it last year. We screened it at a local cinema, and I heard my sister, who's 30 years old, crying behind me. And I was like, oh no, I'm going to cry. So it's crazy just how cruel it can be.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I shouldn't have seen some of the movies that I saw when I saw them. Like, I wish, because a friend of mine, his girls have done what they did on Friends with the character Phoebe, where the mom, like, only showed her a certain part of the movie, and then, like, the bad part, Matt wasn't there. And so she just always thought all of the movies were happy and wonderful, and they're like, what do you mean? You know, I think one of them was Old Yeller.
Yep.
And so she's like, well, yeah, he was fine at the end. They're like, what?
So did you ever see Cujo?
I feel like, because he does that for his girls, they don't know. He's like, and I was like, well, when are you planning to, you know, kind of work that in? It's like, when they're a little bit older and they can maybe handle it more. It's like, I wish that I had that too, because yeah, there's a lot of crying for me. It's like, some of the Disney movies are brutal.
Yeah. So I suppose it does teach kids about death. They need
it
to learn
it. Does. Like, so.
I mean, I first learned about reincarnation watching RoboCop.
Do you know, we all seen RoboCop as kids, and we shouldn't have.
That's true. That's so true. We all had the toys. Hey, some of us still have, like, 20-year-old toys.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Just pulled down all of their original Star Wars toys. They have an original Millennium Falcon. They do have a Boba Fett. Like, they have everything. And when I came down right after, you know, The Mandalorian started airing, they're like, look what we have. I was like,
man.
I remember. Yay.
You know, see the new Millennium Falcon. The Falcon actually has a square antenna on it, because in the original trilogy, the circle one was shot off. So this is how you can tell whether your toy is a new Disney or old Lucasfilm.
Original. I'm gonna have to ask her. So he's gonna have to pull everything back down from the attic. But no, I honestly, it is. It's the original stuff, because I have an older brother and sister. You know, and there's like quite an age gap between us. So we were super, super young, but they went to see everything. So we kind of, you know, followed in their footsteps. We didn't really know what was going on, but, you know, so because of them, like, my brothers became obsessed, even though they were super young. And they did. They got all the toys and, you know, at Christmas time. So
yeah.
It was pretty cool.
I mean, toys. Have you got any toys of Quail yet?
Yeah. A friend of mine gave me a gift. And I also have, like, at our wrap party, one. Like, I got this.
That's amazing. Yay. Seeing yourself as a pop vinyl, right? When it melt his face.
At our wrap party, this one artist who really took a, you know, she became obsessed with The Mandalorian. She's got, her name is Emily Greenfield, and she wrote a Christmas book. It was like Mando's 12 New Friends or whatever, and she had made little stickers. I don't know.
Oh, wow. I can see that. Yeah. I have spoken.
Brilliant. So she sent me
spoken.
I'm starting to develop a nice little collection of, you know, fan gifts and stuff. So
yeah. There's another fella that was in Mandalorian. He played Gecko. His name is Dominic Pace. I don't know if you ever crossed paths with him filming. Yeah. And he has an amazing amount of, you know, Gecko figures, toys, and just, I thought to myself, how can so much, like, how can there be so much toys and stickers and everything made of just one character? It's unbelievable. And I can imagine that there'll be a lot more, like, for Quill. I mean, Baby Yoda probably has everything from pajamas I mean, that's taken off, right?
People have masks with Yoda on. I was like, I want one of those.
it really has taken off. And, you know, see, for the new wave of Star Wars, that's kind of split between the OG Star Wars fans. You got a lot of them that weren't really into the new Star Wars, but you find the ones that really weren't into the new trilogy loved The Mandalorian, because The Mandalorian is so fresh. And I think it's the first Star Wars project without John Williams' score, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know what? The music's still amazing. It's like they take the elements of Star Wars but make it completely new. So it's a new, fresh lick of paint on something that's still very much, you know, that we remember. And I think it visually is stunning. The story's great. The episodes are short enough to leave you wanting more. And that is one thing. When it finished, I was like, more. And Bill Burr also. Bill Burr was in Mandalorian.
I know, right? Yeah, that was...
I don't know if you've got to his episode yet.
People are not used to that, like not used to having to wait, especially on a streaming service. Like usually it's out and then you can binge watch. But I kind of like the way that they did it, because then it was something to look forward to every week. So
yeah. I enjoyed that.
As well with the making of The Mandalorian that comes out on Monday, May 4th.
Yes,
May the 4th, yes. Of course.
Yes, we should release this episode on May the 4th.
Yeah, we might do that.
We should do that.
Right?
Yes, as a treat for everyone.
Yeah,
May the 4th. I love how that's now Star Wars Day, just because it rhymes with May the 4th.
Yep, may the 4th be with you.
The funny thing is, nobody actually ever says May the 4th. They say the 4th of May or May 4th. Mm-hmm. Nobody says May the 4th.
I say it.
Yeah, you do. Of course you do.
Just on the one day.
Yeah.
It has another special meaning now.
I had seen that you had worked on Monster House, which, by the way, happens to be one of my favorite animated movies. So I take it you've done a lot of the attached balls to you, right? It's
CGI. Yeah.
Right. So it's the motion capture. Okay, yeah.
Sure.
Right. So did you play a mix of characters or just the one?
No, really. All that I did on that film was doubling one of the characters, and I ran and I had to jump onto a stair, the balcony, and then like jump onto the first, you know, railing, and I was on wires to the second railing to a chandelier.
Wow.
And that's what I did. Like, it wasn't, you know, a whole lot. It was just one day of doing that and trying to time it well with the riggers that were trying to help me, you know, obviously be able to run and jump onto the railing. So staircase. So
I think great. I can see the scene as well. It's when the big house comes alive. You know, I love that. And I never imagined that they actually used people to capture that motion. I just imagined they would make it like they would make any, like, you know, a computer game or something. Like just I always thought CGI was done on a computer. But it just goes to show how far that kind of stuff's come, huh?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's pretty fun for people to come on the sets at Jim Henson Company, because, you know, you are these animated characters in real time. So we're on the floor, but up on these screens that are all around us, you know, 360 degree angle of screens, the characters are up there streaming. So and it is like, it's crazy because it's obviously all of these young, adorable little baby characters. And then, you know, I always do it with my puppeteer just to keep us locked in. We kind of just, you know, screw around and in between takes, stay kind of in character and talk to the other characters and stuff. And as you know, adults suddenly becomes R-rated.
I can imagine.
The fun part is, you know, obviously that banter, and you just laugh all day. And then obviously we have a code word when guests are coming onto the set, which is like, blue skies, everybody, blue skies. Suddenly behave.
God,
watch your language. That's gotta be now be, you know, yeah, for the guests. So.
It's the whole behave yourself code. So what if you could choose any franchise or any movie franchise, any TV show, what would be your ideal role? If someone handed you a a magic lamp tomorrow, you rub it and out pops a genie, it gives you the one role that you would desire most, what would that be?
Oh gosh, I've been saying it, so I might as well just say it out loud. I want to be one of Baby Yoda's Jedi Masters.
Oh wow. So Baby Yoda has Jedi Masters, huh?
I don't know. You know, he obviously uses the Force, and he's young, so he needs, you know, guidance. He needs Jedi Masters to guide him to learn how to control it, and to not be, you know, obviously pulled towards the dark side. So, I would love to be Baby Yoda's, one of his Jedi Masters.
Not only that, what you say,
like
one
or Yoda.
You know, like with regards to that, The Mandalorian itself, like you could imagine they offered you that part where you're a mentor for Baby Yoda. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're stuck just with Mandalorian. You could be in the next, you know, that could translate to the next series of Star Wars movies.
I didn't even think that far.
Right.
Baby Yoda.
They could have you in.
Teach him.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. That would be the moment where I just like fainted and.
Oh, I wish that would happen. I hope that happened. You know what? I hope it's already happened, and this is just a wee sly spoiler.
No.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. I would love that. I think that's 70%.
I swear.
No, that's good. Because
I was like, what is she saying? But
yeah, no spoilers, so. You should pitch it. You should pitch it to Disney, because I don't think that is a terrible idea. I think it's an awesome idea, because even Yoda needs a mask. It is. That's a great idea. Do you not think?
I say it all the time, like at any time, because it's like, they say it's angel numbers when you happen to be aligned and you see 1111 or whatever. Mm. And it's that often, and that's my wish.
Yeah. Well, hey, the power, the law of attraction is a real thing.
Yes, exactly. I think
if you will it hard enough, you'll get there. I mean, you're already there. Right, exactly. So that's going to happen. And you know what? I can't wait to see Baby Yoda's Jedi Master in season 2. That would be great. And so for everybody listening at home as well, Misty, you also are a singer as well. You can go to Spotify and check out Misty's music. So is this something you're going to look to pursue again, like in the future on a larger scale? Or is it just something you do side by side with the work you do on like The Mandalorian and TV shows? And
It's a work in progress. I mean, I love writing songs and recording and making music videos and stuff. I started it obviously super late in life, but you know, so that kind of pulls you out of that category of anyone ever like signing you. So I'm an indie artist. So it's one of those things where I just keep creating, and keep writing and, making music and stuff. And, you know, hopefully like, my ultimate goal is obviously being an artist and an actor, and in film and television. I think one of the most gratifying things is that moment where you see like a scene that the writing, the screenwriter, the actor, the scene itself and the whole of it, and then a song comes on. And it makes that moment and you feel so much. That's my goal, is to ultimately place, you know, a song or two here and there. And I mean, I grew up with much older siblings, and my parents have always been drawn to music and they love it. And we kind of didn't realize how connected we are to musicians. I became reunited in 2017 with my relatives from my dad's side of the family, and I discovered that one of my second cousins, Rick Roses, he was this phenomenal bass player that toured with Neil Young.
Wow.
And there were pictures of him like backstage with the Rolling Stones and wow, like all these rock stars. And I was just like, and he passed on, you know, quite suddenly in, I believe, 2017. So I never got to meet him. But, you know, I also got to see photos of my relatives, and there's this picture, and it's like, I don't know who they are, but my grandpa is the wall in a picture behind them, and they've all got guitars. So it's like, okay, this makes more sense now. Like, music has been with me and, you know, my whole life. And it's just I never really went that direction. My life has been kind of weaving like most people do, but mm-hmm. it seems like there's these moments where, you know, it just, you have these crossroads. And for me, like I was we're auditioning for Sid the Science Kid with the Henson Company as an actor, but they also asked all of the actresses, you know, do you sing? And I said, sure. No one was like, okay, yeah, why not? It's like, I do, but I was like, not in front of you. They're like, well, you know, why don't you go outside and maybe, you know, think of something and then come back in. And so I did. And the creator of the show was there, and she just remembered my audition, and she's like, what are you doing with your music? And it's like, nothing, because I'm trying to focus, and, you know, one career is hard enough to maintain in this business. But she's like, well, you know, why don't I introduce you to the music, you know, producer of the show, and then see what you can, you know, if you guys hit it off, and you can go from there. And so I met him, and he's like, well, do you write? Because, you know, as an independent artist, you have to write your own music and your own songs. Like, I have one. And he's like, okay, come on in, and, you know, you can pitch that, and we'll go from there. And so I did, and it's just one of those leap of faith things. And, you know, one song has now turned into 11, and I'm about to pitch my 12th song. So, it's a passion. So, and I have goals, but I know it'll take a while to get there.
That's isn't it? And you know, J.K. Rowling didn't actually publish any Harry Potter books until she was late in her 30s. There's no such thing as it's too late at
right.
all.
Yeah.
Because creativity and passion has no limit. Absolutely.
You know, one of my favorite bands is Air Supply.
Yeah, you opened for them, right?
Yeah. So, and that was just one of my, you know, goals as an artist, is to just open for them. I've been a fan of theirs since I saw them on TV, again, because my family was watching. I wasn't really paying attention. I was there with everybody, I think probably playing with toys on the floor, but I heard his voice, and it's like, his voice is what made me turn around. Like, who is that? I like the voice. And then, you know, being like 7 years old, I was like, his teeth are so perfect. And, you know,
what's your favorite Air Supply song?
All of them. I swear, though, there's one that Graham wrote, but Russell really, I think Making Love Out of Nothing at All is my favorite one. That's the one that I heard them sing on TV. And so it's just in my heart. But as a songwriter, there's a song that Graham wrote called I Will Find You. And that one really resonates with me as well, because it isn't about finding another person. It's about finding yourself. So,
that's Air Supply. I listened to a song. They actually done a cover of The Power of Love. And I really like that. But do you know, Making Love Out of Nothing at All was written by Jim Steinman, who is... I love Jim Steinman's music. Okay. He wrote for Meatloaf, Bonnie Tyler. And you can hear that music straight away. And when I first heard Making Love Out of Nothing at All, I was like, that's definitely Steinman. For one, Steinman's songs are like 11 minutes long. So I was like, that's definitely...
They're rock operas.
Yeah, absolutely. Rock opera. Well, it's been great to have you on the show, Misty. So I'll let everybody know they can find you on social media. You can go onto Facebook and search Misty Rosas. Is there any other social media outlets that you'd like everybody to check you out?
It's always fun to go on YouTube. You type in my name. I have a page there. So if you just type my name in, things should pop up. A lot of videos and music stuff is there. I'm trying during quarantine time to sit down and finish doing my lyric videos for people, because they want to like those. They want to be able to really read and what you're saying.
We actually have a guy that could do that for you during quarantine. His name's Seb. He's actually part of our production team when we're filming and stuff, but he'd love to do, because he is chomping at the bits to do anything that comes to editing and stuff. He's just been taken to making visual effects and silly things because he's bored, but you should definitely I should put you in contact with him. He'd be perfect for you.
My skills are very rudimentary when it comes to trying to edit. I was like, oh, I don't want to put that out because it doesn't look very good.
Oh, no.
Like, okay, I will have to meet up with him then.
We'll definitely set up a Skype call.
Okay, thank you.
Just before we end this one, Misty, I've got one question. This is only for us because it's only us that can see you. But can you still remember the sign language for Amy want raindrop drink?
Oh, my gosh. it's Amy want green drop drink. Something like that.
Thank you.
He's a Congo fan.
Oh yeah, it's a guilty pleasure. It's one of these films that I revisit every now and again. It's such good fun. It's such good fun as a film. I remember when it first came out. I was only 11 years old, I think, when it came out, and I remember thinking that's quite scary, and then and then you watch it when you get a bit older, and it's just fun.
One of those, again, another kind of crossroad into where I was and where I ultimately got going, because that's my that was my first job ever, you know, in film and TV, first major type of audition, and I knew nothing. Like, I hadn't been to school yet for, you know, to prepare to be on camera and stuff, so it was just a crazy crash course, and one, being on set, two, being in front of camera, three, learning how to be what is called a guerrilla artist, because it's the whole thing. So, because you have to, they trained us for 3 months before we started. So it was a big undertaking. But yeah, it changed everything for me. So, you know, forever for Congo.
From Congo to the Jedi Master that teaches Baby Yoda.
Yes!
That's the name of the next podcast, right?
Perfect.
You can come back on our podcast anytime.
Absolutely. This is a blast.
Definitely. So. Definitely. Well, thank you very much, Misty. And look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. And stay well. Stay safe, stay inside for a little bit longer. When they start releasing everybody, let's try to hang in.
Try and square up that one. Huge thanks to Misty for coming on this episode with us. May the 4th, who could have timed that better, right?
Exactly. I mean, there's literally no other day that is Star Wars Day.
Yeah, true that. Apart from the day that it gets released, because then everybody's running about dressed as Kylo Ren. Maybe not for the next trilogy, but spoiler.
He's at it again.
Unless it's a prequel. But yeah, absolutely. That was amazing for us to speak to Misty. And we'd love to speak to her again in the future about upcoming projects. And Misty, as she was saying there, is also an artist. She writes her own music and, you know, she really puts her heart and soul into this. So at the end of this episode, which is very soon, we are going to play one of her songs for you guys. And you will find the link to Misty's social media and to her music on Spotify and on YouTube in the description of where you're listening to this episode, be it Podbean, be it... Where are we, J-Mac? Where?
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere you get podcasts, basically. Absolutely. Except Amazon. Except what's her name? Alexa. Alexa still doesn't know who we are.
Oh, but Alexa doesn't play any podcast. I'll ask them for Joe Rogan's podcast, and she won't play it.
Well, she plays it for me.
Right. Okay.
She does. Says me. Me and Alexa are on like first name terms.
Oh man. See, this has been an absolute pleasure for us, and we hope you guys have enjoyed it just as much as we enjoyed speaking to Misty. Thanks very much for your continued support, guys, and we will see you on our next episode of the Jibber Jabber podcast, which will be a lockdown lore.
Oh yes, it will. And I think the subject has been chosen by our good friend Toddulous. I don't know what that is. Todd.
we should get Todd on to talk about it. He actually seems quite knowledgeable.
We should get Todd to toddle on the Jibber Jabber.
Yes, so if you guys if you guys want to hear some scary stuff, the idea of lockdown lore is that while we're all in lockdown, to take your mind off what's going on in the world and how scary it is, we will then scare you with other stuff like lore. Just to take your mind off it. Okay.
Hey, what the fuck, note.
Absolutely. So tune in next week, guys, where you will hear some lockdown lore. I, of course, as always, I'm Kevin Wells, and this guy is...
I am J-Mac, and stay indoors.
Exactly. Now, here's a nice tune from Misty, and we will see you next week. Make sure to go ahead and like and share this episode and follow Misty on all her social media. Absolutely, guys. Love y'all.
Bye-bye.
Way down underneath the pretty perfect porcelain picture that's been painted of her life. And way down underneath the veil, there's a darker truth hidden by the brightness of her smile. And way down deep in the paper, how she's tattooed with their words that they burned across her heart. And way down deep in the paper, how she struggles with her work and she's torn herself apart. She's frozen there in the paper house. Top of her lungs, this isn't me. And way down underneath the kaleidoscope of illusion, her shades of blue, they paint a different scene. And way down deep in the paper, how she's tattooed with their words that they burn across her heart. And way down deep in the paper, how she struggles with her work and she's torn herself apart. She's frozen there in the paper house.
She's frozen.